Hello guys, welcome to the next episode of the Challenger the Podcast, and of course we have the usual reviewing stuff to do. There's been plenty of quality, like, classic matches over the week. There's also a lot of good narratives and storylines, so I'm excited to guide you through it and, you know, just relive it for myself as well. There were three Challenger 75, so basically it's our call where we're gonna start. Let's maybe head to Asuncion first, which was the last Challenger final to be completed yesterday. Merida had its final, the Challenger in Mexico had its final Saturday, so it was just Asuncion late at night. But it was worth staying up for, let me tell you, because Gustavo Haida beat João Fonseca in the final, the all-Brazilian battle. And let's of course start with, the champion, and also let's start talking about the final. So the final in itself lasted 3 hours and 15 minutes. It was a crazy battle. I would say there were definitely large chunks of that match where Haida did not influence this, like, wasn't influencing the scoreboard too much, wasn't influencing the patterns of play too much. But he did fight back. He played like a billion drop shots in that match. Of course, he is a pretty, a tricky player to face because he hits pretty flat for a clay quarter. And eventually he gets the job done against Fonseca. I think he only won one of these games, but the two games that they played at the beginning of the decider, which lasted like 30 minutes, I think that was a big part of why Haida eventually prevailed. That definitely sort of made Fonseca run out of steam at that point. But I have to say that for Haida, this isn't really out of nowhere. I mean, last week in Santiago, he was in the semifinals. He beats Barrios Vera, Colarini, Mager, and loses to Bagnis. And this time in Asuncion, he beat Aboyan, Sakamoto, Weiss, Varias, and Fonseca. So maybe a bit of an easy draw at first, but we know that Valerio Aboyan has been in good form. Varias, of course, a great win for him. Varias, by the way, was my pick for the title. And then Fonseca in the final, as I said, a big, big battle. For a while, they were kind of going at a pace, which suggested that maybe they will get that second longest Challenger final ever. However, obviously, yeah, after Fonseca kind of disappeared the last few games, they only ended up at 3 hours, 15 minutes, which would be 16 minutes off that record of the second longest Challenger final ever. The first one was still very far away, 41 minutes from them. But yeah, also worth to mention that Haida was, last year, he was in the Bogota final, or actually he kind of wasn't, because he had to pull out before it due to illness. So it's super cool for him that he managed to get there again pretty quickly, like a few months, and this time was able to not only play, but just stay out there for 3 hours and eventually prevail over his compatriot, who's got so much potential. But for now, he was not able to claim his first Challenger title. And speaking of João Fonseca, I mean, nothing really new we learned about him this week. I think there was a lot of, like, ups and downs. There was a lot of fluctuation in terms of his level. This is what we've been seeing this year, too. I mean, sometimes he plays a ridiculous match against Fils Garin, even the first set against Navone in Rio. But other times he can just lose to, I don't know, Lavagno in the opening round, Federico Agustin Gomez in the opening round in Santiago. This time he beats Guillen Meza from a set down, then Escura Isnardi, this Paraguayan wildcard, then Orlando Luz from a set down, and that was also way more from a set down because he was 3-6, 4-5 down, 15-40 on return. He manages to win the next 2 points. Luz plays a stupid drop shot on one of them. One of them, though, is a great attacking combination from Fonseca. Then he gets through Buruchaga, which was such a big win, too, because, you know, against Roman, you gotta pick your spots wisely. Against Roman, you gotta just, like, you just can't play like Fonseca usually does, right? I mean, and for a while, actually, João was not the better player in that match. I mean, especially when he was 1-3 down in the third, having lost the second 1-6, it seemed like he has no business staying in that match, but he actually won the next 5 games playing some ridiculous tennis. The forehand down the line that he hit to go up, I think, 15 love in the last game. And even the final against Haida, I mean, the guy is just a human highlight reel, right? I mean, it's for him so far, it's pretty tough to navigate this and, like, change some of his patterns into percentage play. I also don't think he should be, like, you know, overthinking it in a way. I think for now, when he's 17 years old, it's fine for him to be playing like this. It's not gonna lead to the most consistency of results, but all experiences like this, and I think clearly with this final he's still ahead of schedule, but all experiences like this will just make him a better player in the future. So yeah, second set against Haider. I mean, both first two sets, like, he could have won them, he could have lost them. He saves the match points against Haider. And then, as I said, I think maybe if he broke in that first game of the decider, which was like so long, maybe then he gets it done. But in the end, he loses the last set 1-6. But again, it's nothing to worry about really, because he's still so far ahead of schedule and still such a ridiculous talent. Yeah, and when it comes to the semifinalists, I already mentioned that Juan Pablo Varillas was my pick for the title. Of course, it was a bit risky given that Varillas was coming off the Santiago title, so I was like a little, you know, should I pick him, should I not? But I figured he's one of the best players in the draw anyway, and I can try. He won three rounds. He beat Prado Angelo, Zanellato, and Gomez. But then he lost to Haider actually pretty comfortably, so, you know, that was the moment of the week when it was just too much, all the recent playtime and all the recent effort from Juanpi did take like too much out of him for the semifinals against Haider. But I can't be too disappointed with this pick. And also Roman Andres Buruchaga, who played another match against Gianluca Magher, so three times in 3 weeks they face each other. Buruchaga won in Santa Cruz and Asuncion, Magher won in Santiago. Otherwise, he also stopped the sort of home crowd favorite Adolfo Daniel Vallejo, of course, the great Paraguayan junior, well, recent junior at least. In the second round, he also beat Colarini and lost to Fonseca in that match where, yeah, he will be a bit disappointed about not getting it done, because for a while it did look like he kind of has to pull it off. But of course, Fonseca is such a talented player, and when he went on that patch of play the last few games, there was not much that Buruchaga could do. But it's still a very solid effort for Roman, second challenger semifinal of the season after Punta del Este. And of course, maybe the bigger highlight of his year was getting around in Cordoba after qualifying over Diego Schwartzman. And yeah, I guess when it comes to Asuncion, that's more or less it. We also should talk about the doubles, of course, where Boris Arias and Federico Zeballos managed to claim the title over Gonzalo Bueno and Alvaro Guillen-Meza. Arias Zeballos were the top seeds, and they only really had one match where they struggled at all, and that was the semifinals against Romboli and Zorman. So, as usual, kind of in these South American draws, most of the field isn't that strong, but you're going to find quite a few pairings that simply, like, when they face each other, it's going to be tight. And yeah, despite winning the final easily, Arias Zeballos had that one tough match against Romboli Zorman in the semifinals. Alright, and with that, I think we can move to the European Challenger 75s. One of them was in Murcia, one of them was in Zadar. Let's maybe kick things off with Murcia. I think that's going to be the smart thing to do here. So in Murcia, Enrique Rocha beat Nicolas Pasiashvili 3-6, 7-6, 7-5 in the final. That was a crazy one, for sure. And when it comes to Rocha, we mentioned him, I think, at the beginning of the season a little bit, because the guy won 6 ITF titles in 2023, also won this, won this year, of course, as a challenger, but yeah, in 2023 he won 6 ITF titles. He qualified for the ATP 250 in Estoril, which I don't think his level was quite as impressive then as it is now, but he still did it. So we were expecting quite a lot when he had that Oeiras double at the beginning of the season, you know, that this might be his challenger breakthrough, if you may. And that didn't happen, and like, it didn't happen in pretty spectacular fashion. He lost to Tyson Kwiatkowski 6-4, 6-4, and Valentin Royer in 6-3, 6-love. So it wasn't going that well, I mean, the first few appearances for him on the challenger level. However, this time Rocha beats Roca Bataya, Barrer, Albot, Yamas Ruiz, and Basiashvili. And that was a pretty crazy run. I mean, the guy has a very heavy forehand, which not only he can use aggressively and like to dictate play, but I loved him against Albot, for example, in the quarters when he was just throwing off Radu with like the use of different height on the ball. Of course, Radu is like a, you know, not a natural clay courter. He likes to take the ball early. He likes to, I don't know, play indoors for the most part, or on like a quicker hard court. So for him, it was a real issue. Then Rocha also fares very well against the shot-making, against the talent of Pablo Yamas Ruiz. And then eventually, in the final, against Nicolas Basiashvili, like for a while, we're going to talk about Basilashvili in a second, because of course it's quite surprising that he actually made the final after, you know, the last few years. But for a while, it just looked like Rocha might not be able to hang with Basilashvili even, you know, the Georgian former top 20 player was just blasting the ball and, well, kind of playing smart too, and just didn't seem like Rocha has anything to even like touch him with. However, he breaks back when he was, when he had to at 3-6, 4-5. Then in the third set, he also goes from 0-3 to 5-3 up. And he deals with the disappointment of not serving out the match a lot better than Basilashvili did an hour earlier, and claims it 7-5. I mean, yeah, he really had no business playing, he had, like, even sticking with Basilashvili for a while. However, he managed to fight his way through to that title, and it was a very impressive effort, absolutely. I mean, the grit that he displayed throughout the week, really, but especially in that final, that was something. And I think he should be getting an Estoril wildcard. Two of them have been announced, I think, Fonseca and João Sousa, right? João Sousa ending his career. I think with this appearance, Enrique Rocha kind of probably tipped the scales in his favor compared to, of course, where Jaime Faria is as well. Faria has been on an insane ITF win streak, 20, I think, or 21 maybe even it got to recently. However, I think with this title, Rocha probably takes it as like the more optimal Estoril major wildcard, I think, given that they only have one left. And speaking of Nicolas Basilashvili, number 1,086 before this week, and in fact he's also going to stay at 1,086 because of course we are talking about challengers that are happening first week of Miami, so they're not going to influence the rankings yet. They're going to influence the rankings after Miami when they are updated. However, live, he's already inside the top 500, so it's quite a big a jump. And when it comes to Basilashvili, you know, 2022, such a negative win rate. 2023, he goes 4-19, and he falls out of the top 1,000, despite this year actually like putting in some good ITF work. Second round at the beginning of the season, then quarterfinal from qualifying, and then quarterfinal, semifinal. So he was getting some form back, you know, at least some rhythm back on the ITF Tour. He actually was 0-4 in challengers going into this week, two of these matches in main draws, two of them in qualifying. So still, it was quite surprising to see him pull off this run, and he beats Yevseyev, Barreto Sanchez in the qualifying, then De Jong, Blanchet, Trunheriti, 2-4 down, I think, in the third set, and then also Albert Ramos-Vinolas in the semifinal. Ramos-Vinolas was my pick for the title, so another semifinalist for me. And Basilashvili, as I said, I mean, he was pretty much dominating Enrique Rocha. And the main thing is, I guess, because I actually managed to watch Basilashvili live twice last year, which was my first experience. And I mean, I understood fully, you know, why he's considered such a power player and stuff. But like what he was doing last year was just straight up ball bashing. And of course, that's always going to be a part of his game. Like, you know, just power hitting. He was a ball basher when he was on the main tour as well, when he was winning 500s left and right. Well, left and right maybe is a stretch, but I think he won 3 500s. But when it comes to like even his peak, he was ball bashing in a way. But this week he showed that he actually like wasn't ball bashing in the same sense that he was in 2023. Like you can still sort of take it down a little and just basically rely on the quality of your hitting, which is still sublime for someone like Basilashvili. But, you know, just try to build up the points in any way, and then, I don't know, just try to stay in them instead of just randomly blasting every ball and trying to, like, destroy it, maybe. And Basilashvili did that amazing all week. I mean, he was really just reminding you of that level that he had when he was on the main tour, and I don't know where it will take him. I mean, determination, sure. We'll see how much he has, you know, of that. Whether his tennis quality is still enough to, like, produce a top 100 run or something like that. I think it's too early to tell. I think it's still more likely that he's not gonna do that. However, yeah, this was a real wake-up run for him. And, yeah, just a showcase of his talent, which was pretty nice to see this week. And yeah, really, that's it about Basilashvili, I suppose. And then we also have the semifinalists. I already mentioned Ramos-Vinolas. I can't be disappointed with my pick either, although he did like struggle quite a lot. Jorda Sanchez was his second round opponent, and he saved the match point against him. Then he beats Bu Yun Chao Kete in the quarterfinals. By the way, shout out to Bu, who showed up for one clay event despite never winning a set on clay in his pro career. He was 0-3, 0-6 in sets. And he was actually pretty nice. Like, you know, he likes having physical matches. He likes grinding with that heavy forehand. So Bu Yun Chao Kete's clay game actually turned out pretty good. But yeah, then against Basiashvili, Ramos Vinolas didn't really stand a chance. So I guess maybe he was not winning this title anyway, but who knows. For Basiashvili, if he won, this would have been his first challenger since 2016. For Ramos, it's even longer than that, 2015. I was surprised by that because I actually remember Ramos Vinolas showing up at some challengers in the last, you know, 5 years or so, obviously, especially 2023. 2023, I remembered that he never won one, but I was thinking like maybe one of these guest appearances, if you may, in the last few years got him there, but actually not. So 2015 was his last challenger title, and for now that streak is still going. And for Pablo Llamas Ruiz, it seems like the clay season couldn't come soon enough. It's actually kind of wild to remember that at the beginning of the season he had that Montpellier run where he qualifies, he beats Gasquet and plays Rune in the second round. And he was kind of like, you know, not on top of the world, but he was really making solid progress there. But then he also tries the qualifying for Rotterdam and Marseille, is unsuccessful, horrible in Tenerife, Sekes Behervar he loses to Fatic. So he really dropped that form, that rhythm he had. And then in Murcia, that's again like such a exciting version of his game, you know, what we saw this week. Chojinski, Gakov, Gasquet, and then the loss to Rocha. Of course, Llamas Ruiz is like such a varied player, you know, he basically has all these spins and angles he can unleash on you. Also, it's surprising how much he actually does with the serve and forehand combo for a player who doesn't even possess a strong serve. So it was definitely very fun to watch Pablo Llamas Ruiz again sort of at his natural habitat. And yeah, hopefully more to come throughout the clay season. There is also... No, that's not this event. Okay, never mind. Because I remember I have... Oh, okay, that's going to be in Zadar. Yeah, anyway. So let's just talk about the doubles then in Murcia. We've got Teo Aribaje and Vlad Victor Cornea winning that one over Kadhe and Nedun Hezian. When it comes to Aribaje and Cornea, this was their second challenger together. They made the semis in Sekes Vehervar, so definitely a nice start to that pairing, both of them in the top 100. I wonder how they communicate, because I remember that Aribaje and Sanchez, they barely speak English, but maybe they're getting better, or maybe Cornea is a French speaker, who knows. I mean, I guess you don't need to communicate all that much in doubles. I mean, the signs are universal, right? But just like off the court and in practice, it probably would help. Anyway, never mind. Zadar is the third Challenger 75 we had. Jozef Kovalik picking up his sixth Challenger title over Adrian Andreev. So let's start with just Kovalik. You know, such a veteran. He kind of kept it up for the seasoned pros this week as other titleists were all maiden winners. And Kovalik, I think looking at his results especially and also remembering how it's been going for him, like he actually started the season pretty well. We haven't been able to talk about it. I don't think anyone is really talking about it. However, his level was already pretty nice. Like Sekes Vehervar, he loses to Drogé, the eventual finalist in two sets. Tenerife, he loses to Yun Chao Kete, that's also fine. He loses to Travaglia in Tenerife 2 in the quarterfinals. Some early losses to Bellucci, Schellbach, but all of them competitive matches. So, like, this is really where we saw that form sort of present itself in results. He manages to beat Furness. There's a key win over Zsombor Piros, where he goes down Love 6 and wins the match. And also Nino Serdarusic in the first set tiebreak. That was tough, too. But then he beats Foretek and Andreev. It was kind of like a victory lap, honestly, in the semis and in the final. I don't think either player by that point, Foretek or Andreev, were like fully fit. Foretek probably just gassed. Andreev was like touching his shoulder a lot. And yeah, I don't think he was like fully fit. However, still it was a great performance from Jozef, who, yeah, just hit solid, heavy, and beat all these guys by playing his very natural game with like, yeah, very within himself, not going for anything crazy, but certainly showing, you know, all that talent that he's produced over the years on the Challenger circuit. And not only, as of course he was number 18 in the world a few years ago, his 13th Challenger final, 6th title, all on clay, obviously. And yeah, quite a nice return to form after 2023, which probably wasn't a pleasant season for him. with a very negative win rate. However, he had that one brief, like, big patch in July, which kind of kept him up in the rankings. But otherwise, he was really in trouble. So there's lots to gain if he can just keep up this form this season and sort of, you know, make sure that he's going to stick around the Grand Slam qualifying spots and Grand Slam qualifying range. Next week, I will already spoil it to you, he plays Nardi in Naples in the opening round. That's going to be quite a big one for both guys. Adrian Andreev, the runner-up, his first challenger final. He made three semifinals in 2022. He seemed to be sort of like working towards, I don't know if a top 100 campaign in 2023, but certainly like a breakthrough. It never happened. He was injured a bit at the beginning of the year and it never happened, but in a way his quality was also exposed that year, I think. So this season, also wasn't going too good for him. I mean, a couple of round two appearances from challengers, which don't look that bad because, well, he had to qualify for all of them, but still lots of early exits as well. And this time he manages to beat Ginard, Matej Dodig, Enrico Dalla Valle, and Timofey Skatov. Nothing crazy, honestly, but the way he managed to outlast someone like Matej Dodig, whom I'm actually going to mention soon, Timofey Skatov in the semis, you know, much more aggressive from Andreev than from Skatov. I guess both guys kind of like playing, you know, defensive, counter-punching tennis, but at the same time just having that big forehand to rely on, and Andreev's was much more dangerous on the day. He manages to get to the final against Kovalik, but then it's a bit of a no-show. Like, that was not one of the great finals that we had this week, no. That one was certainly a bit more, after a few games, you kind of knew what was going to happen type of deal. So still, it's good progress for Andreev to make that final, but he wasn't really, like, able to make it stick, you know, wasn't able to make it competitive against Josef Kovalik. Now, was that because of the shoulder? Tough to say. And Timofey Skatov, as I said, the semi-finalist, he loses to Andreev. Earlier he beat Novak, Giannessi, Kopp, seemed to be finding his level a little bit, but he was a little tame against the Bulgarian for sure. But honestly, also since then, I mean, he went to Naples qualifying and he retired after seven games, so maybe he's still not, you know, that close to getting his level back. Pretty much the first highlight of this season is the Zadar semi, of course not counting Davis Cup, where he beat Cerundolo and Echeverri. So that was a couple of crazy upsets that didn't really turn into like a proper winning run for him yet. And Jonas Voracek, the semi-finalist, I mean, recently in India, we were chatting about like Voracek potentially going on a run, potentially having a great opportunity in one of these events. It never materialized. I mean, when he made the main draw on two of the four events, he had tough draws. Like, he lost to Vacherot, he lost to Blanchet, and then he also didn't qualify on two occasions. So it was a little disappointing after his recent ITF results. Voracek kind of reminds me of Thiem in a way, in that after the injury, he lost a lot of the explosiveness on the forehand. He's not as dynamic as before, and he kind of needs to play different tennis. And I think by the match with Dino Prismic in the second round, like that was a good example, because it just became such a slog for him, you know. He had to really grind it out. He actually loses the second set 0-6, which was insane, and he gets back at it, you know. He just returns in the third set with more energy, and he manages to beat Dino Prismic. That was a fantastic win for him, like really one of the best ones he's had since the 2022 injury. And then he beats Lukas Neumeier as well to lose to Josef Kovalik in the semis. But this is major progress. This is really nice for Voracek. And let's see if the rest of the clay season can sort of follow along for him, because clearly that was his best run in a while. And like, I mean it, like a really long while. In 2023, he had a challenger quarterfinal at the end of the season in Maspalomas. But otherwise, I mean, he was barely winning matches all year. When he was on the ITF circuit, he was, but yeah, basically I think since the injuries in the spring of 2022, yeah, so essentially when he got injured in the Heilbronn semi-final against Andrei Martin, like that was his last challenger semi up until now. So it's been a while, but it's good to see he still has something left. He still has a lot of ability left. Let's just see if he's ever going to be as explosive as he was in the past. And as I mentioned, I also want to talk about Matej Dodik, the 18-year-old Croatian, whom I mentioned last time as like a player that I really want to see because he was in a great ITF run. And he proved it. Like I know he won via retirement against Misolic, but you know, no disrespect to Filip, but to me that retirement was like a little, I don't know. I mean, he was 6-7, 2-5 down. Just let the guy serve it out. There was no apparent injury either. Like, you know, of course he wasn't playing too well and he wasn't moving too well either, but it wasn't like super obvious. But anyway, he beats Misolic via retirement and then he loses to Andreev in 3 sets. Matej Dodik, I mean, to me, he kind of had to go through the same coaches as Dino Prismic at some point because the way they are moving, the way they are hitting their backhand slides, especially, yeah, I mean, it's pretty much identical. But what sort of makes it different is how much more offensive Dodik can be with the heavier forehand. I really enjoy that game. I think that it should have quite a lot of potential. I don't know if it has more ceiling than Dino. Dino is probably a lot better athlete, I don't think Matej Dodik is quite capable of quite the same things defensively as Prismic is, but just when it comes to like comfort level, you know, dictating play and hitting the ball harder, Dodik is way more ahead of, well, it's like way ahead of Prismic. So yeah, I mean, he's going to be such an exciting talent to follow, I think. Currently, he is just outside the top 400, but yeah, hopefully lots more to come from the young Croatian. He is 18-3 for the season now. Before this, he won 2 ITF titles back-to-back with some solid wins. I mean, Jay Clark especially, a couple of youngsters as well. This year so far, he's only lost to Kravchenko, Ulises Blanch, and Andreev, so it's a good pack. I mean, it's not, you know, he hasn't had any outrageous losses, no. And yeah, that's it, I guess, for Zadar. Oh, and we also have to talk about the doubles, which were won by Manuel Guinart and Grégoire Jacques over Roman Jebawy and Zdenek Kolář. So Grégoire Jacques, they are on a pretty nice run, I would say, this year. They already have 2 titles. It's 8-5 together. It's not quite as good as they went in 2023 when they were 17-3 as a pair and they won 4 challengers. However, you know, they kind of are keeping it going, and since pairing up for the first time in around June last year, they already have 6 challenger titles in that group. Of course, maybe I think scheduling wise sometimes it could be a little tough for them too, because Guinart of course is still primarily a singles player. Jacques doesn't play it anymore. Jacques is just full on doubles. But anyway, they're going to be in Naples as well next week. And yeah, when it comes to the last challenger we had, it was the Challenger 50 in Merida, sea level, by the way. This is not, you know, it's Mexico, but it's not altitude. Soon enough, we're going to have the challengers in Mexico that are on crazy altitude. In fact, as early as next week already. So when it comes to Merida, it was Tristan Boyer claiming the title over Juan Pablo Fikovic. Oh, and by the way, I don't think I mentioned who was my pick in Zadar. I don't really remember it at the moment. Oh, Dino Prismic, right. He lost to Forejtek in the second round. Obviously, I was not too angry about that. I definitely love Jonas's game. So, yeah, it was just a great match to follow. And also, oh, I should mention that Dominic Thiem in Zadar, he beat Filip Krajinovic in a match that was a big letdown. Like, both players were... I can't say Thiem was awful. Thiem was awful from 6-5 to up and double break when he couldn't serve out the second set 3 times and then he won it in the tiebreak. But Krajinovic, up until 2-6-2-5, I mean, he was so all over the place. Somehow, after that first event in Koblenz, when his game looked so clean compared to the other players, he just disappeared. I mean, I don't know. But anyway, Thiem also played Lukas Neumeier in the second round in Zadar. And he lost 2-6-1-6. And after that, Domi actually decided to withdraw from Naples. So he's probably going to be back in Estoril. Maybe the smart call, because whatever he did in that extended training block, it doesn't seem to have worked. And it also doesn't seem like he believes in it, you know. Against Krajinovic, it was just fine for him to be hitting solid and heavy. But against Neumeier, I mean, it was just... No, it was just a very disappointing performance, given, you know, the sort of plan for the season that he had and how he hoped that that extended training block will change something. Anyway, let's get back to Merida, where Tristan Boyer is the champion. And Tristan Boyer last year, as you guys maybe remember, he won. He made two Challenger finals on clay, Antofagasta, and then earlier in Savannah. Savannah, he kind of never had a shot because he was so tired after winning his semi that same day. But then Antofagasta, he pushed Ugo Carabelli. So not a surprise. I remember talking about him a bit during the Indian Swing, how he was probably like, well, the last run, the semifinal, made it okay for him. But before that, he would have been a little disappointed with his achievements, with his results. So definitely not going to be disappointed with how Merida went for him. I think it's very fair to say that he was the best player this week. He beats Ayeni, Pacheco Mendes, Dimitri Popko. Popko was my pick for the title in the quarters. Popko actually won the first set, then goes down. And then he beats Hart and Fikovic. And honestly, from 3-5 down in the opener, Boyer played an insane match. Like, that was an absurd level. He was just taking the ball early on both wings, despite it being clay. He was producing all these great angles, closing down points at the net. The first set tiebreak was still close, and that's mostly because of a smash that he missed. But yeah, I mean, he was just all over Fikovic. Like, it was just relentless attacking, despite it being clay. There was no way for the Argentinian to really neutralize it in any way. And that was a very, very impressive performance from the young American. 7-6, 6-2 against Juan Pablo Fikovic. Good chance to make Roland Garros qualifying now, so really a lots to like about how the last few months have gone for Tristan Boyer. Although he will still drop that final, right, from Savannah, but yeah, I still think he has a very good shot at making Roland Garros qualies. And then we've got Juan Pablo Fikovic as the finalist. We know that Fikovic is like a mostly a faster clay player, so to make a final at sea level is still a fine achievement for him. He was actually the guy who stopped Dimitri Popko's recent insane ITF win streak. I think it was maybe 23 by that point. He won the 25k in Recife against him. And by the way, Fikovic also started the year 0-6, so like right now he won 9 matches in a row before losing to Boyer, so he's already, you know, over 50% when it comes to his win rate. But yeah, this week he beats Aguilera, Guerrero, Campagnoli, Kozlov, great win, because Stefan really seems to be rounding into form. And also Murkel Delian in the semis, that was one of the best weeks, best matches of the week in Merida. And he loses to Tristan Boyer, but as I said, I mean, Boyer was just unplayable from 3-5 down. And when it comes to the semifinalists, we had Nick Hart and Murkel Delian. Murkel, we've talked about in recent weeks. Of course, he still has a great win rate for the season, 26-7. Challenger final in Santa Cruz, semifinal in Merida, 2 ITF titles. This is clearly the best season that Murkel Delian has ever had. Like, already. If he manages to keep it up, we'll see. Is it possible for him to be the better Delian at the moment? I mean, they recently played and he managed to beat Hugo, so maybe. Hugo was in Asuncion this week, but he only won 4 games against Alexander Weiss, so it's actually very possible that Murkel is the better Delian at the moment. Their rankings are getting closer to one another as well. Murkel is presently at 2-9, but if we look at the live rankings, I think they will actually be very close to one another. 176 Hugo, and Murkel is where? 2-2. Okay, so he didn't maybe advance that much because it was just a Challenger 50 semi. But like, yeah, there is a big chance for Murkel Delian to be ranked higher than Hugo soon. He only lacks like 70 points to his brother at the moment. And Nick Hart, the other semifinalist, honestly, a bit of an overlooked run. He beats Paz, he beats Broom, he beats Mena. I guess Hart is one of these guys who, like, the Challenger 50 category kind of exists for, right? Someone who's been amazing at ITFs the last few years, but struggling to bridge the gap. This year, in around February, he wins a challenge. He wins an ITF, makes a final of another, losing to Merida Aguilar. Then he makes the final of another, losing to Tyson Kwiatkowski. So, you know, he's kind of been back to his usual tricks. We haven't been able to watch or talk about him too much on the Challenger level. But this time he had a very solid round, just Tristan Boyer was way too good for him. And yeah, I guess with that we can just talk about the doubles in Merida, which were won by Thomas Funke and Hunter Rees. recently we mentioned them because they were in Kigali, and we sort of said that, well, they kind of needed to win at least one of these titles in order to make that trip to Rwanda worth it. They did, and they also win in Merida, so it's actually seven wins in a row for them now, because they had a semi-final walkover here. Their final opponents, though, also deserve a mention, because it was Boris and Stefan Kozlov. So Boris Kozlov, the brother of Stefan Kozlov, that we were watching pretty much for the first time this week, managed to get with him into the final. And they didn't play anyone crazy, like Vance Whiting, Bram Ribeiro Lago, Campania Lipa Checo Mendes. But of course, it's still a fun story for the two brothers to make it to the final. And with that, I think we can talk about the match and upset of the week. So when it comes to match of the week, as usual, I put out the poll on Twitter. There were quite a few classics. I think I would consider Foretek Prismic a classic. I would consider the final between Basilashvili and Rocha a classic. And also Fonseca, like literally quarterfinals to the final. Every single match of Fonseca was amazing. Currently in the poll, it's pretty much a race between the two challenger finals that we had. One of them is Haide Fonseca. One of them is, of course, Rocha Basilashvili. And leading is Haide Fonseca. I totally understand that opinion. I think to me the better final was Rocha against Basilashvili. Honestly, I might go, like, just kind of, you know, to be fancy about it, I will just go for Foretek Prismic, because I think it deserves to, like, be remembered alongside Haide Fonseca and Rocha Basilashvili. I think it does. And also, simply, I believe that the rallies that they were playing, particularly in the first set, and how it was like an 80-minute affair, that was super entertaining, and perhaps even more so than if Foretek had that awesome forehand from the spring of 2022. Because, it really made him have to grind this out. And maybe that was actually my favorite match of the week. But Basilashvili, Rocha, Haide Fonseca, I mean, they are fine picks too. Honestly, every Fonseca match from the quarterfinal onwards was a fantastic affair as well. Like, it kind of makes it even more compelling that he's so, like, he's still trying to grow into his game, you know, piece it together. Because, it's just such a mess for him every single time, but it's a fun mess to watch. You get a sensational shot every now and then, but at the same time, you also get so many errors and, just so much struggling to, like, play the percentages. It's a fun experience. But yeah, my pick is going to be Foretek Prismic. And when it comes to upset of the week, we've had a few big ones. Asuncion, there was Vice over Delian, but again, Ugo is not in a great form at the moment. There was also Escura Isnardi beating Olivieri, the Paraguayan wildcard, stepping up. Crazy odds on him. I didn't know the guy. I still don't really know him that much. But can I call an upset over Genaro Alberto Olivieri an upset of the week right now if Olivieri has been in such horrible form? I don't know. I'll see if there's anything, you know, special in the other events, but I don't really think so. Like Murcia, not really. In Zadar, there was Foretek over Prismic, but, you know, I think that's an understatement of Jonas's talent. Giannessi beating Mute, that was pretty good as well, but Giannessi, the defending champ, he like kind of had all the motivation in the world this week. Not that it gave him much against Timofey Skatov in the second round. And I think in Merida, we had a big upset over with, wow, I actually missed that one, Jacob Brum beating Oliver Crawford. Still, I mean, yeah, that's actually going to be my upset of the week. I think I kind of respect Crawford more right now than I do Olivieri. Like, I would expect a more stable level from him. And he's also one of these guys who, like, whenever he drops down to the ITF level, whenever he plays it, he's super solid. And I'm not saying this is ITF level, but, like, Challenger 50, Jacob Brum in the opening round. Like, this could happen to you at an ITF event. So, yeah, my pick is actually going to be Brum over Crawford. It's a result that I missed completely. Funnily enough, I mean, coming into this week, Jacob Brum was 0-8 for the year. 0-9, sorry. Now he's 2-10. And I know he's been playing a lot of Challenger qualifying, or like even Challenger main draws in Rwanda. But still, yeah, that's probably going to be my pick then. Yeah, Jacob Brum over Oliver Crawford. That's my upset of the week. I understand Escura Isnardi, though. definitely another crazy showing. And after that, we have, well, we are still sort of continuing with the clay season. We have four challengers to preview. We've got there are two 75s, but that's going to come later. Both of them in like the Americas. And there's also two bigger events in Europe, in Naples and in Girona. So let me start with Naples, which of course is the challenger 1-5, the biggest one this week. We've got Federico Coria as the first seed, playing a qualifier, and then a qualifier Krajinovic on a protected ranking. Basilashvili, the Murcia finalist, takes a special exempt. He will play Dugas, so a good opening draw, I think, on clay. But second round, he could have a very exciting matchup incoming with Corentin Moutet or a qualifier. Then we also have Fonini and Rodriguez Taverna, Travaglia and Valkus, Cecchinato Maestrelli, and Brancaccio against Pierre-Yves Herbert. It will be interesting to see how Herbert does on clay. I don't think we've had him... Well, we've had him playing on clay some last year, of course, but like not since that spike of form that he's had. There's Zsombor Piros against Francesco Passaro. Piros, of course, still with that shot to break the top 100, which is kind of like dying on him. But Naples, a big run here. It could really change it still, but yeah, it's kind of desperate times for Zsombor right now. Like, he really needs a big run in Naples to get it done. Currently, he's 107, about 40 points away. Yeah, so he would basically need to, like, make the final, I think, here. He plays Francesco Passaro in the first round here, so it's a very tough draw. Then you have Napolitano against the qualifier, Blanchet, Fatic, Marterer, the third seed. Oh, that's interesting. Because Maxi, of course, did not start the year well at the ATP level. He was, I don't know if exposed or if he just wasn't hitting as confident as he was at the second half of 2023. But yeah, interesting to see him coming back to the challenger level here. Matteo Gigante plays Benjamin Bonzi. That's a great first round right away. You've got Enrico Dalla Valle as well as a wild card playing a qualifier. And then at bottom section, I already mentioned Kovalik against Nardi. That's a big one. Honestly, to me, I think Kovalik might be the favorite. And then you've got Martino Agamenone as well. I just don't know if Nardi will translate this to clay. Also, does he have anything to translate to clay? Like, of course he played an insane match against Novak, and he also won that one against, who was it, Zhijian Zhang, right, in Indian Wells. But, like, otherwise, he kind of hasn't been in amazing form this year. So we'll see if he has anything, like, to translate to clay even. And in the qualifying for Naples, we've got Elias Immer, who could have been in the main draw had he signed up right away. But he's going to play Hertz today. So I'm recording this on Monday morning, by the way. He's going to play Hertz, so it's not going to be easy for him to even make it. There's Giannessi, there's Lavagno playing Vincent Ruggeri, Ginart Andreozzi, that's a pretty fancy round, final round too. There's Arthur Gea, the French junior, Iggy Vesely playing Matthias Borg. So yeah, there's lots to like, but I don't think any of the qualifiers would necessarily win the title. And it's also hard to come up with a pick here, because you've got, well, Piros Passaro round one, that's pretty crazy. Do I trust Marterer to, like, after the recent poor patch that he's had, do I trust him to just return here and win the title? I actually might. I'm thinking of Marterer. Because I like his draw. Like, I think the draw could kind of ease him into the clay season, if you may. Because you've got a qualifier first, then Blanchet or Fatic. And then by the quarterfinals, when he's playing Piros or Passaro, you kind of might like his chances. I think I will actually go for Marterer, despite his form this year. There's also Gigante Bonzi. Yeah, I don't know how Matteo is going to start his clay season either. As I said, Kovalik Nardi, to me that's super close. The second quarter is very wild, like you can have a Fonini run maybe, but otherwise it's very close. And you could also pick Federico Coria, like 100%, it's an option, but I'm kind of afraid of that Basilashvili-Moutet quarter final for him. Like, I really don't know who would win that. So actually Maximilian Marterer is going to be my pick, yeah. I wasn't expecting to go for him because, yeah, this year he's 3-8. But it seems that after Indian Wells, you know, he didn't play Miami. He gave himself a bit of time to prepare for the clay. So, yeah, let's try Maximilian Marterer. Let's see if he can kick off his clay swing with a title. And then we go to Girona, which is a challenger 100. Ivan Gakov is the defending champion. And, of course, he's in the draw this year, too. We've got Pedro Kacin as the top seed. Kacin is trying to snap a very long losing streak by now. That losing streak is, well, he's 0-9 for the year. And last year he also lost the last 4 matches, so he's on 13 losses in a row right now. Like, if he's going to regain it somewhere, it's probably a Spanish challenger, right? I was maybe thinking more of Madrid in 2 weeks' time. But Girona is fine too, you know, it's not at altitude, but like, he could also do well here. And Kachin, I mean, the last matches, he actually took a set for 6 straight matches from the Australian Open to Indian Wells. However, in Miami, he was like blown off the court by Vavasori. So I don't know. I mean, he plays a qualifier here, so he's not going to get a better shot to snap that losing streak. Then in the second round, he could play Gakov or a qualifier. We've got Daniel Rincon facing Carlos Taberner and Radu Albot against Grégoire Barrère. Albot and Barrère, I think last week, were both beaten by Henrique Rocha. We also have Ramos Vinolas against Mauro Canhas. That's a fun old Spanish match. A couple of qualifiers there. Layal against Droguet. Gonna be interesting to see if Layal can produce anything on clay. Yamas Ruiz takes on Ivashka right away. You've got Bernabe Zapata Miralles against Roca Bataya and Haris Hassan. Moreno Dalboran plays a qualifier. And the Murcia champion Enrique Rocha is here playing Christian Garin. So that's obviously a big opening round. Jesper de Jong plays Jan Chojinski, Pellegrino Moleker, Trunheliti Alvarez Varona. That's quite interesting too. Oh, so that's why Alvarez Varona is not... Okay, that's interesting. Because I saw that he like disappeared from the qualifying draw. He was supposed to play João Sousa. And I was just thinking, oh, so he withdrew. But no, he actually got a wildcard. Okay. So that was a pretty late wildcard addition then. It seems. Yeah. And actually, it was the same with Taberner as well. That was weird. So they placed them in the qualifying draw. And then they took them out. Wow. Okay. And there's also Pedro Martinez as the second seed playing a qualifier. Out of the qualifying, Novak Baranko Cosano, that's a pretty fun match. I think we've had it a few times on the Challenger Tour in recent years. Abdullah Shelby, he's here. He's going to play Jorda Sanchez, though, so it's not obvious. João Sousa, who will be retiring in 2 weeks' time in Estoril, he plays Vilius Gaubas. No, that's a qualifying match I might want to watch today. Gustavo Elias against Sanchez Izquierdo. Yevseyev is the top seed. But yeah, that's basically it. I don't think we're going to be picking any of the qualifiers to win. Pedro Kachin is honestly an option, like if he plays himself into form. But yeah, maybe in Madrid, maybe not in Girona. Yamas Ruiz, I'm thinking of, honestly. Like, I think I might pick Yamas Ruiz. Ivashka round one doesn't sound easy, though. Like, you know, maybe Ilya, despite having just a few wins over the past year or so, maybe he somehow gets something going. There's also Droguet in the second round, potentially. Like, that's not easy. I'm not going to go for Ramos Vinolas again. Not that I was necessarily disappointed with Murcia, but Mauro Canhas round one, that's really tough. Who else is there? Jesper lost to Basilashvili very easily last week, so not great. Zapata Miralles, by the way, coming back to the Challenger level, that will be interesting too. But I just don't know if, you know, on such a losing run, like, can he produce right away? Can he actually find his form just from the get-go? He's 2-9 for the season. In the Golden Swing, he was like barely contending with guys like Baez, Jerem, Munar. He won with Garin via retirement. You know what? I think I'm going to change that. I think I'm going to try Zapata Miralles. I do expect him to show his quality at some point at the Challenger level again after coming back to it. Like, I do expect him to be fine eventually, and I don't know how quickly he will make it back to the top 100. I think at some point in his career he probably can, though. Like, I remember when he was struggling at the Challenger level for a few years, or, like, you know, not struggling, but actually playing well on it and struggling to break through. It just always seemed like he has obvious top 100 quality. So I kind of expect him to show it again. But I don't know if this event right away. But because I have no other pick that, like, really excites me, no other pick that I really want to, like, okay, so this is definitely the guy I want to go for, I'm actually going to try to go for something crazy. And yeah, just pick Zapata Miralles, despite him being 2-9 for the year. So I guess it's a bit of a pattern right now that I'm picking guys who are at a horrible record for the year and just recently sort of dropped off the main tour. Or, you know, in case of Marterer, his ranking is still around the same. But, like, yeah, just trying a challenger after some unsuccessful runs on the main tour. So I guess maybe that's going to be a theme. Let's see if in San Luis Potosi and in Sao Leopoldo I can do the same. So when it comes to these two events, the Challenger 75s in the Americas, let's start with the like more usual ones, São Leopoldo, where we have Juan Pablo Varillas as the defending champion, and Juan Pablo Varillas is also in the draw. However, I think that São Leopoldo title he's defending, wasn't that 2022? Yeah, it was 2022. That event was not around in 2023. Also, it was at a different date. It was in October, I think. Anyway, Juan Pablo Varillas is the top seed. He could fit into my pattern of picking guys who have had a horrible main tour run this year. We've got Gonzalo Bueno against the qualifier and Gianluca, and that's kind of, you know, the top four players. Then we have Mager against Daniel Dutra da Silva. João Lucas Reis da Silva is also there playing Oliveira. Camilo Gocarabelli against Alvaro Guillen-Meza. I like that opening round matchup for sure. Then Sanchez Hover plays a qualifier. Weiss, Colarini, Quaco against the qualifier. I think Buruchaga was supposed to be here, but he withdrew. Blancano plays Puccinelli de Almeida. We've got Prado Angelo against Bobrov. Olivo against Mateusz Alves. I think Mateusz Alves, I have to check if he won that final, but I think he was in an ITF final just this week, playing against a fellow Brazilian, maybe? Let me check that quickly. Yeah, he lost to Daniel Dutra da Silva in that final, actually. And when it comes to Merigeni Alves as well in that section, the fourth seed, he plays a qualifier, so we could have an Alves-Alves. Genaro Alberto Olivieri, sixth seed, plays a qualifier, and then Adolfo Daniel Vallejo or Liam Drax, the grinder, who recently, of course, won a few stunning three-hour matches at the challenger level. Pedro Sakamoto is there playing a qualifier, and then Orlando Luz, also pretty positive run of form. He's gonna play Thiago Monteiro. I already have an idea who I wanna go for. And then let's maybe just look at the qualifying. Kaichi Uchida coming back after some issues. Juan Bautista Torres, can he be dangerous? Boscardin Diaz had some potential a few years ago. Emilio Gomez is back as well. That's interesting, because Gomez, I think this year, he only like played Davis Cup in February. Yeah, that was his only appearance, and he lost to El Sayed from Egypt there. And right now he's coming back in the qualifying for São Leopoldo. His ranking is down to 546. So nothing like too exciting in the qualifying anyway. I think when it comes to picking from this draw, you kind of have to go between the seeds. Ugo Carabelli plays Guillen-Meza in round one. I don't really like that, but he's definitely a possible pick. Varillas, if he is able to maintain it physically after the title in Santiago de Semis in Asunción, he's an option as well. I think Merigeni Alves, anytime we have a Brazilian challenger like this, you know, he's not out of it. He's not out of the title contender question. But I think I'm just going to try Thiago Monteiro. It's kind of picking up, like it's kind of maintaining that theme that I mentioned of like players who are struggling. But actually this year, Monteiro was, you know, more than fine when he played the Golden Swing, right? He made the quarterfinals in Rio. Was it a bit of a scam job? Like a little bit, because Alcaraz, of course, rolled his ankle in the match against him in like the first or second game. But you know, Monteiro hasn't been horrible anyway. He went to Miami recently. He played a three-hour match with Adam Walton. Earlier than that, he had a semifinal in Santa Cruz where he lost to Ugo Carabelli. I like his chances if he beats Luz to go fairly deep here. Vallejo could be dangerous. But, you know, I'm going to try Monteiro. I think between the top four seeds, I think, is where most would be heading here. It's kind of hard to pick anyone besides them, because after that the seeds like drop off quite a lot. We don't have Buruchaga anymore, so we have Oliveira, Olivieri, Blancano. Yeah, these guys probably aren't winning the event. Maybe, like, I was thinking of going for something crazy like Vallejo, for example, but I'm just going to stick with Thiago Monteiro, the second seed here. And the last one, the last challenger we have to talk about, San Luis Potosi. So we are back at that insane, basically, part of the season where we have the Mexican altitude challengers. It's over 2,000, is it? Let me see quickly, because some of them are over 2,000. Mexico City, for sure. San Luis Potosi is a little below 2,000 meters, but you could already see it yesterday in the qualifying that, you know, the guys were like struggling to really control the ball in any real way. We'll see how it is in the main draw, especially as it was super windy yesterday. But yeah, Thomas Barrios Vera is the defending champ. He is playing this event. But we've got Thiago Agustí Tirantes, the top seed, playing Gerard Campagna lead, and Bicknell or Gallo. Ernesto Escobedo with a wild card here plays a qualifier, and then Crawford or Palan. Palan could be interesting with his serve, but I have no clue how he's gonna fare on like altitude clay in general in terms of, you know, just controlling the ball in the rallies. Vachero against Tomic, that's a big one in the opening round. Interesting from Vachero to play this. He was in Miami qualies, of course, and he lost to Andrea Vavasori in the second round of that event. Mitchell, only his second week loss of the season too. On the Challenger Tour, he's actually unbeaten, 15-0 or 16-0. No, 15, I think, at least main draws. Mitchell Kruger against Marc-André Hüsler. Hüsler could be dangerous. I mean, obviously, this has been one of his best swings, like, yearly. Last year, he only played Mexico City, I think, because he was around the top 50 in the rankings, and he actually lost to Federico Gallo in the second round, so that was disappointing. But, you know, back in the day, this used to be one of his favorite parts of the season, for sure. That's kind of how he broke through in 2022. Then we also have Omar Jasika against Vasek Pospisil. Pospisil playing this event is kind of wild. I mean, I'm so excited to see how he'll do. Also, Denis Kudla against Juan Pablo Fikovic. I mean, Kudla on altitude clay? Let's see. Mark Polmans playing Murkel Delien. Benjamin Locke or a qualifier then. Aidan Mayo plays a qualifier. And Barrios Vera has a tough one right away, I think, against Skulkade. Skulkade at altitude could be dangerous. You've also got Mpechi Pericard, who should like the conditions, against a qualifier. And then Pacheco Mendes or a qualifier. And the bottom section, we've got Galarno, Bellier, and Duckworth is the second seed. So when it comes to Duckworth plays a qualifier, by the way, when it comes to Bellier, he's also loving it in this part of the year. Actually, 2022, it was this event was won by him. That was the big breakout run for him. He beat Hüsler in the semis, I think, but Hüsler won the 2019 edition. So basically the last three champions of this event are still here, and yeah, they should be dangerous. I mean, Hüsler, Berrier, the players with massive lefty serves who love to approach the net. Sure. And yeah, when it comes to the qualifying, we need to look at that, although I already have an idea as to who I'm going to pick. We've got Baby Dzhukajew there against Elmar Ejupovic. That's a good one, actually, on altitude. I have no clue how Dzhukajew plays on clay, but altitude still, and Ejupovic was really good in this part of the season last year. Vessels against Mejia. Soto plays Mena. Mena always a threat in these conditions. Kalianda Punacha as well, after that recent Indian swing run. He actually managed to sort of, yeah, start even traveling around the world to play Challenger singles, apparently. Well, I mean, of course, he's also going to be in the doubles draw, but still, it shows quite a lot of intent that he's playing these events now. Maybe it hasn't worked out in Murcia, but he lost to Gaubas, so it wasn't a horrible loss. And here he beats Nick Chappell. Now he's going to play Andres Andrade in the final round, so a good chance probably to make it. There's also Stefan Kozlov, who lost just one game against Ivan Zhu. Let's see if he can beat Sid Subervi, but I think in Rwanda, in Kigali, Stefan Kozlov showed that he has an altitude clay game, yes. But as for my pick, I think I have to go Thiago Agustín Tirante. Like, Tirante is just so good on altitude, with the big serve, with how much damage the forehand does, with how he can cover up the backhand hole. He is generally excellent in these conditions, and I just feel like if I pick him, you know, every single time for the next three events, he's going to win at least one of these. Like, that's basically how I feel about him here. Blaise Bicknell in the second round for him, like, maybe that's not easy. He could play Hüsler, Vachero in the semis. That's not going to be obvious either, but I just can't really bank on players like Bellier or Hüsler doing well right now with the form that they're in. Like, we're going to see, you know, maybe these conditions wake them up, but they need that. Like, they need something to get themselves going. So let's see if they find it. Duckworth also should be dangerous. Pechi Pericard, Barrios Vera. But these guys are in the bottom half, so that's why maybe Tirante is an even stronger pick. I think if he doesn't lose to Bicknell, he really should be making the semis. So yeah, that's what I'm going to go for. Thiago Agustín Tirante, very obvious pick given its altitude clay, but you know, the guy has been insane on it the past few years. I would love to see him in like Stad Kids BL this year. He actually played, I think, qualifying for one of these last year and lost. Had a pretty disappointing performance, but yeah, right now that he's sort of around the 100 level in the rankings, if he keeps himself in there until Kids BL and Stad, I would love to see that. Anyway, that's going to be it for this week. Thank you guys for listening, and thank you as usual for your attention. It's going to be a fun time again on the Challenger circuit as we are fully into the clay season. And I'm going to be back in 7 days to talk about, now the tough job starts. I mean, I've been talking for almost an hour, but now is when the tricky challenge comes in. So basically, São Leopoldo, San Luis Potosi, Naples, and Girona. These are going to be the four Challenger events that we're going to be talking about next week. And I'll see you guys there. Bye. We'll be right back.